Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And good morning, everybody. Yes, indeed. 8 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is indeed here in Studio 4. Nice to see you again.
And
good morning.
You. Summer is here.
Yeah, summer is here, and you've been a busy guy the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
After on your soda deal, I have to tell you, I have rarely seen a subject matter that has been reacted to with such a loud noise and from the gut on the part of my listeners and others across the country.
Yeah, from the gut. That's exactly the right term. The truth of the matter is, airlines have a big problem. People can't fit in the seats anymore.
I've sat next to some of them, yes.
It really is true.
It is true.
Now, I mean, listen, if you think about it, the number of adolescents with diabetes and prediabetes has gone from something like 9% to 23%. 23% of our kids are going to come down with diabetes. We've got to do something about this. The number of deaths in New York City from obesity is almost up to the number of deaths from smoking. Smoking's coming way down. About 7,000 will die this year, and diabetes and obesity and diabetes and other things is up to 5,000 and growing rapidly. This is the single biggest public health issue in the country, and everybody's sitting
arguably
around
the
ringing.
World. Arguably.
It's the first disease that has gone from being a rich person's disease to a poor person's disease. Think about that. It used to be, you go back and look at the pictures of the old robber barons with their big stomachs out in the 20s and, you know,
or the royalty
the crash.
Of Europe.
Absolutely. You know, they were proud that they were fat. They all died young, but they were proud until that. Today, it is poor people who are dying much more. And the numbers are just off the charts, and you got to do something.
58% of New Yorkers specifically, are obese.
The good news is, in New York, we did bring down the obesity rate by about 5% among kids in the last few years, and it's from getting healthier snacks in the schools, getting rid of full sugar drinks in the vending machines in the schools, education. Maybe some better food alternatives. Not clear that really does. People say, oh, well, you know, we should educate more. We're trying to educate, and this is one of the ways to educate. They say, oh, you know, they should exercise more. Exercising is great for you. It really does improve your health, but it doesn't have very much to do with your waistline. You got to run for something like 30 minutes on a machine to eat up one muffin or one apple pie. I mean, it's just, if you want to lose weight, you have to consume fewer calories. And the trouble here is that there's nothing wrong with things in moderation. Nothing wrong with having a full sugar drink. You'd probably be better off with a diet one, but one isn't going to hurt you. When you start drinking 32 ounces of this stuff, that really is detrimental to your health. And we're not taking away anything from anybody. All we're saying is the restaurant has to serve it in 2 16-ounce cups. If people are yelling and screaming about that you can't do anything. I mean, you know, this is ridiculous. And what the studies show is that if the portion put in front of you is less, you will eat less or drink less. There's a great study done of people. They have this soup bowl, and they give you a spoon, and you're sitting there, and they see as much as you want. And then below the level of the soup, there's a pipe coming in, and it's pumping more soup in as you eat it, so the level never goes down. And people keep eating and eating and eating and eating.
Until they burst.
You gave them one bowl of soup without that, they finish, you want more? No, thanks, that's enough.
Right.
And so all the studies show that. And all this really does is, and it has nothing to do with stores. Stores are regulated by the state, but restaurants are regulated by the city. And assuming the Board of Health approves this after a comment period, the only change is for full sugar drinks, not diet drinks, but full sugar drinks in restaurants and movie theaters and carts and that sort of thing. If you want to get more than 16 ounces in one serving, they've got to serve it in 2 cups.
I've heard the soda industry complain about your idea. Well, I can understand why, obviously.
Well, they
but how about the rest? I'm curious about the fast food restaurants. City Hall heard from them at all on this?
No, I mean, everybody's opposed to any changes. Bring this back to the smoking. Smoking is going to kill a billion people this century around the world. In New York City, the smoking rate from kids has gone from 20-something down to 7%. Only 14% of adults smoke. 10,000 fewer people are dying in New York City. And when we put it in the smoking ban, everybody, you think this was bad, it was everybody was opposed to it. Today, virtually every major city in America does it. Virtually every major city in Europe, and there they did the whole countries.
Two big malls yesterday over in New Jersey banned smoking.
Nobody would go back to smoking here. And the sad thing is, all this stuff is targeted towards poor people who understand less about nutrition and that sort of thing. Now, you can say, wait a second, fix your schools, and we're trying to do that. And there's no one solution. And there's nothing wrong with the products from PepsiCo and Coca-Cola. They are responsible companies. They are making stuff that people want to buy. This is not targeted towards those companies. This is targeted towards the consumer, to try to get the consumer to understand that their health is on the line and that they are responsible for their own health. People say, oh, people should be in charge of their own health. Yes, and that's what we're trying to do. It's like calorie counts. We tell you what the calories are. You can decide what to buy. We tell you whether the restaurant's kitchen is clean or filthy. You can decide still to go. Nobody's taking away any of your rights whatsoever. This way, we're just telling you that's a lot of soda. And so this restaurant serves it in two 16-ounce glasses.
Do you think that the reaction, the emotional reaction against this is possibly generated by sort of the trend in our society of these sort of, you know, I didn't elect my mommy. You know, that kind of thing that we see in our world.
You know, that's the politics going up and down. A lot of it's generated by the press because they want a story. So you rush out. My example is you can have 999 Nobel Prize winning doctors that say smoking's bad for you, and there's one herbal medicine podiatrist that says smoking's good. The newspapers writes a balanced article, and then the headline says doc says smoking's okay. This is not that. You know, and the difference between smoking and full sugar drinks is that in smoking, it's not clear that one cigarette can't give you cancer. As a matter of fact, some people come down with lung cancer who've never smoked.
Never smoked. I unfortunately have known some.
But there's a lot of correlation between the smoking and cancer. In this case, there's nothing wrong with a small amount, a reasonable amount. If you go back 20 years, 30 years, the size portions that used to be served with 6.5 ounces. Now we're talking about 32 ounces, and you wonder why people are a lot fatter today, and they are.
There are some that are 64 ounces.
And there's no people that say, well, this isn't the only thing. They're right, but you got to start someplace. And I look across this country, and people are obese, and everybody wrings their hands, and nobody's willing to do something about it. Come back to smoking. If you can explain to people, and it takes a while to do it, and then all of a sudden, they sort of catch on, and it becomes fashionable. You used to see people standing outside office buildings smoking. Today, very few, and when you walk by, they put the cigarette behind them.
That's because we have stigmatized smoking. And what we need to do is do the same with people who are obese and do it in not a mean way, but you got to get them motivated.
You know, there are children 19 years old who have 60-year-old diseases today. And they're diabetes and things like that related to overweight. There are 6 years old that you look at them and the doctor says you got to be in your late teens, you got to be in the 20s. You can't have all these. We've never seen these diseases before. And I would criticize the federal government for not doing anything. I would criticize the state governments for not doing anything. But in the end, it's the cities that do things. If you take a look, environmental agendas, it's the mayors across this world, not just in this country, but across the world who are doing things. Why? Because the public, when their water isn't clean or their air isn't clean to breathe, they call the mayor. They don't call anybody else. And we've got to do something. It's the mayors who are fighting against guns. The Congress and the legislatures have all been rolled by the NRA. Shame on them. Mayors, the 650 mayors that have joined our coalition. It's the mayors that are fighting immigration. You know, the Washington is paralysis. They can't, even when they agree on something, they can't get it passed because they can't be seen to be working with the other side. And the country's getting very badly hurt because of it. But this one is really a no-brainer.
I'm sure you've seen the editorial pages today. They are all in your favor.
New York Times was not.
But the
Post and the News.
And even Lupica, which is not, he's not one of your major supporters, even he says the mayor's marrying.
You know, can't say I didn't have a smile on my face when I read his column. Yeah, I talked to him yesterday. We were joking about when he was a sports columnist, and sports journalism is still very different. Obviously, I was pleased with that. But I think the News and the Post editorials were right on. No solution to all the problems, no guarantees, but you gotta try something. And why the Times wasn't there, it just defies credibility, given their normal
I positions. Said yesterday on this program that you watch on the political front, you will find the usual cast of characters come out instantaneously slamming their hand on the table, saying that this is ridiculous and the mayor's out of control here. Even the Speaker of the Assembly today said we might have to legislate this thing out.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I assume the governor would veto it. I haven't talked to Shelley yet, so I don't know how much of that's made up. You know, Shelley's the kind of guy who really is trying to do what's right, and I think once he sits and looks at the issue and we get a chance to talk to him, he's in favor of getting... It is government's job not to ban things, but to give you information and in some cases keep you from using them. For example, if there were asbestos in this building, the government would evacuate this building, shut it down, and there are very few people that would say, oh, let people go in and breathe asbestos. There are a handful of crazies, but most people would not. You go the whole ways from that to just giving information. When we put out the restaurant grades, everybody laughed at this. The city council wanted to roll it back. It was onerous. Of course, some of them were getting campaign donations from restaurant chains. Okay, fine. Today, the city council thinks it's such a good idea they want to use the same thing to grade subway stations. And if you talk to restaurateurs, if they lose their A, it hurts their business. Not everyone. There are some people that don't care. And if you want to go to a C restaurant, go ahead. Be my guest. We've done our job. We've told you. But once we put the grades in, the number of salmonella cases, which is a food poisoning you get from dirty restaurants, dropped almost overnight 15%, and that you know because that's people go to hospitals with it. It really is a very painful thing. Yeah, so these things do work. It's always hard to explain to the public, but I come back in the end, smoking has saved more lives than anything society's done in an awful long time. And if you go back, I was trying to think when you had this big an impact on smoking kind of impact on public health. Back in Queen Victoria's days in England, somebody figured out that the water supply and sewage system should be separated.
Good idea.
And if you look at life expectancy, it went straight up all of a sudden when they separated that. And there was another case back in the 1700s, there was a Frenchman, I forget his name, but he died in an insane asylum in France at age 40-something. He noticed that babies born where the nurses delivered the babies had much better outcomes, lived longer, much healthier, than babies born where professional doctors delivered them. And he looked and nobody knew about germs in those days. But he noticed that the nurses, after every time they treated a patient...
Washed their hands, I bet, right?
They went and they were so proud of their appearance rather than their degrees, which they didn't have, they changed their clothing and washed up. And the doctors went from the pathology lab to the delivery table without even washing their hands. And those are two of the big things. Life expectancy has gone up, and the population of this world used to be going up. I forget the numbers. Once every 2,500 years up until about the 1700s, and then life expectancy is once every 25 years, or not life expectancy, population of the world's doubled. It's numbers like that. I forget the exact numbers. But this is something that I'm convinced will be accepted down the road. And even if it doesn't make a big difference, it's not hurting anybody. The beverage companies will still sell beverages. They can sell the same beverages. Maybe it'll get people to move over to diet beverages. It's certainly not going to hurt their overall business. It can help the health of the public. And if it doesn't, at least it's a shot across the bow to all of us. We've got to do something. We can't just keep sitting around and complaining about these things.
Any significance to the timing? of doing this? I mean, you could have done this 5 years ago. You could have done it 6 years ago.
You can only do so many things at once. We've been working on lots of things. You know, I mean, there's always this business, oh, second term, third, last term, you're not doing anything. That's not true. And as you know, I happen to believe public health is one of the real responsibilities of government. And in New York City, the average person lives 3 years longer than people living in the rest of the country. Just think about that. 8.4 million people living 3 years longer. And it's all in the last 10 years. It's gone up. The rest of the country's done nothing. So all these people that say, keep the government out of it. Well, when you, for the last 3 years, you're not going to know what the last 3 years of your life are. But just before you die, remember, you got three extra years. And if you have somebody that lives in the rest of the country, I always say this, people laugh, but statistically it's true. If you have friends living elsewhere in this country and you really care about them, get them to move here. They will live on average 3 years more. They really will.
No, I understand. Sit tight, Mr. Mayor. 23 minutes after 8 o'clock here on the John Gambling Show. We've got lots more with the mayor and we'll give you an opportunity. John Gambling with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 27 minutes after 8 o'clock. I talked with Fernando Mateo yesterday, of course, the Taxi Association. He is indeed. There is a lawsuit that is up against the city on your outer borough taxi stuff. They want to kill this thing as fast as they possibly can.
Well, you know, the first thing is what you should do is do the research of who gets campaign donations from whom. Okay, I mean,
there are a whole lot of groups here that want to kill this thing, and I can't figure out why. I can figure out why.
The stupidest one is Bill de Blasio, who has sued, arguing that the law isn't legal, the plan isn't legal.
For home rule, because of home rule.
Yeah, right. Because there's no local authorization. So what you should ask when you get him on the show is, when's he going to stop and sue to stop the pension reform that Cuomo got passed in the legislature, or the finger imaging, which I happen to oppose, for food stamps that was recently enacted, both done without any local, it's just selective. The question you really got to ask is, why is somebody like that, who's not a stupid guy, why is he opposed to getting taxi service for four boroughs that have none and the northern half
too?
And what did he say?
He didn't have a really good answer other than it's going to be dangerous. I'll tell you what he said. He said it would be dangerous for the new outer borough cabbies because there wouldn't be enough police oversight of crime. And I said, what?
Yeah, where did that come from? I mean, Fernando's a decent guy, but I don't know where that comes from. Crime is so low, that's not an issue. We don't have, there's always a cab driver held up, and every once in a while, killed for money. But generally, it has become a very safe profession. I just can't see how you can go to 80% of the people in the city and say, we're going to screw you. We're not going to give you the services just because you don't live in Midtown Manhattan below 96th Street, which is the only place the yellow cabs serve, really, and the airports. And just the contempt for the public that they show, and whether it's, an argument over a home room bill, what are you talking about? Or taking a campaign donation and protecting an industry rather than the people. It's like people, John, with the smoking thing, who talk about, I don't want to hurt the tobacco companies or the full sugar drinks. I don't want to hurt the beverage companies. We're talking about hurting the public. That's what they're supposed to be out there. And when they say, it's too onerous, we should have more education. Spammy, we've been working on education. You got to do something. People, it's like not removing bad teachers from schools. Let's do it next year or the year after. So a whole nother generation of kids is going to go and not get an education, and they never catch up, no matter what anybody says. That's just, how can you look the parents of those kids in the eye? These schools that we are closing, and then kids can apply, the same kids get in, but there's also new seats, or teachers, I'm sorry. Some of the teachers will be removed from those schools because the job hasn't been done. And we had something like 12, 15,000 applicants for 1,000 places. Teachers, good teachers, want to come and teach in our school system because they know we're making progress. But if you say, let's not make any changes for another year, or let's study it more, or come on, this is just ridiculous.
Well, that's what happens in the world of politics. Make no decision, that way you can't be criticized. And that's why I think people are surprised at Michael Bloomberg.
You mentioned Mike Lupica. Obviously, I think that's I was thrilled to see him write that. But good government is leading from the front. And I've said this before. I've always thought two of the best senators we ever had were Teddy Kennedy and Orrin Hatch. Kennedy, probably too liberal for me. Orrin Hatch, too conservative for me. But both when they ran, and they were in the Senate together for 40 years, very close friends, they said, this is what I believe in, different things. But they said what they believe in. If you elect me, this is what I'll do. They got there and they did it. Even when it wasn't popular, they did what they were elected to do. And I think we're elected not to do a poll and see where the public is on full sugar drinks. The issue is trying to do something to solve a problem and then explaining it to the public. And the public is a lot smarter than the press gives them credit for. You explain it to them. Just take a look at the acceptance of the smoking ban, which is still the single biggest thing that I think any city has done to improve public health.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me sit tight. Let us sit tight here.
We continue on the John Gambling Show, Friday edition, Mayor Michael Bloomberg edition, 22 before 9 o'clock.
Mr. Mayor, employment numbers, and disappointing, I'm sure, for those that are concerned themselves, as we all will. 69,000 jobs created in May. That's about half of the month prior. Lowest in a year. Unemployment rate jumping a tenth of a percent to 8.2. Reaction?
Well, the unemployment rate sort of a number that jumps around a lot because it's done by a telephone survey.
Job creation, what about?
Job creation is the most important thing. Part of the problem is Europe and China, both of which are obviously slowing down. Those are the markets for American products. And manufacturing in America actually has been doing well over the last year. It's been selling a lot of stuff, but it hasn't been creating a lot of jobs. Companies are lean. Now, that's typical at the bottom of a cycle, and then over a period of time, they fatten up a little bit and add some of the more things that are nice to have but weren't necessary to have at the very bottom. But part of the problem here is that the markets we sell to aren't great, including the consumer confidence here. I have argued again and again and again, the best stimulus would be for everybody to believe that America gets its act together and is going to take care of the future. Congress is immobilized. People can't believe these guys don't even talk to each other. They literally have rules within their party. Don't ever be seen having dinner with the other side. And the only way you should get stuff done is to come together and make trades, and you get some and I get some. That's what democracy is all about. So the public doesn't understand how Congress is so immobilized, and they've watched the process, whether it was Dodd-Frank or the health care bill, and said, this is the way laws are made, and they're just shocked. And then they don't know what the regulations and the tax rates are going to be down the road. If you don't know about tax rates and regulation down the road, you aren't going to make investments. So banks aren't going to lend, and companies aren't going to borrow and create jobs. And we've got to do something about this. Interest rates are so low, unfortunately, the Fed can't do very much else. I mean, that you can borrow 10-year money for under 3%, 2.5%. I mean, some of these interest rates are negative.
I saw a 30-year mortgage going for 2.97 the other day.
Probably floating, but yeah. Sure. What Congress and the president have to do is to come together and say, we are going to seriously address the issue. We have got to get more revenue, whether you like it or not. The only ways you're going to balance the budget is partly new revenue, and then we've got to make some real cuts. And whether you like it or not, the only ways you balance the budget is to make some cuts. And you just literally, the numbers, when somebody stands up there and on the stump says, I'm only going to do one side of that, that is just lying to the public, or they really don't understand, and which is even maybe scarier, I don't know. You just have to do both. And my suggestion has been all along, President should stand up tomorrow and say, look, I don't know if the economy is going to get better or worse. I don't know whether I'm going to get reelected or not, but I'm going to do what I think is right for this country. I will veto any law that tries to change the end of the Bush-era tax cuts for everybody. That would take care of half of our deficit over the next 10 years, and then turn to Congress and say, particularly Republicans, and say, you didn't like revenue, but I've taken care of that. Now, let's pass Simpson-Bowles together. It's a rational plan, not the perfect one, but a rational plan to reduce our expenses. What we can't do is we cannot see at the end of this year, no matter who's president, another battle over the deficit ceiling. People are going to say, America's talking about defaulting on their debt. That scared people last time. It's going to scare them again big time. You cannot sit there and say, we're going to let all this sequestering. Sequestering is where they said, okay, if we don't do anything else, this calamitous thing's going to happen. We're going to close the military. We're going to stop stop everything. You just can't let that happen. You can't even get close to it. It is so irresponsible. And the problem here is nobody has confidence in the future. Nobody has confidence that Washington can pull together, and it's both sides of the aisle, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. It's the state governments and the city governments as well. It's the public. It's you and me. We all want something for nothing. But unless we do this, this is really going to get scary. And Europe could really come apart here. Spain has got enormous problems. Greece, everybody assumes that Greece will either drop out or they'll bail them out or something. Greece is tiny. Spain is much bigger. And along with Spain will go Italy and some of these others. China, their economy is slowing down. We're going to go through.
Yeah, they've got real manufacturing problems in China.
And we're going to go through some really tough periods in the next few years, and it requires real leadership in Washington, and it requires both presidential candidates to stand up and say explicitly, "This is what I'm going to do," and lay out specific things, and that real live economists with real data, the independent budget office, people like groups like that, can say yes or no, this will work and it won't work. Just saying I've got a secret plan to end the war, it may get you elected, but it's not going to instill confidence. And this is getting much more serious every day. And you look at the stock market's down 6% this year.
What are the numbers? 200 points month. Down in the futures this open here this morning.
I looked the other day, in the last 4 years, I think the S&P's basically unchanged, maybe even down a little bit. In 4 years, you have no growth whatsoever in the stock market. And so people who've invested in the stock market, their IRAs and their pension funds, they've got no return. And that's not going to change unless people get confidence. The job number, these numbers jump around. And in all fairness, next month they may revisit this month's numbers and revise them, and maybe they'll revise 2 months ago. But fundamentally, what is happening here is there is no enormous confidence where people say, "I'm going to go buy a new house. It's a good time to do it. Low interest rates, and I'll probably have a job. I'll be able to afford it, and I've got to take some risk." Businesses, business may not be great today, but it's going to be great tomorrow. I've got to start building that plant today. And in New York City, we have more people working than ever before.
Yet but your unemployment rate is higher than the national
average. Yeah, but that's because people are coming into the city. It's two factors, we think. One, a lot of the jobs in New York City, people in the surrounding area, we have 3-odd million people that come into New York City every day to work here. There are people coming into work here who are getting some of those jobs. They're not all the new jobs we created aren't going to people who live in the city. And two, when things look better, people say, I think we might need a second income. I'm going to go get a job. I think now I could get a job. If the economy's really bad, they say, I'm not going to get a job. I'm not even going to look. And when the telephone survey comes around and says, "Are you looking for a job?" "I'm never going to get a job. No, I'm not looking." That's the unemployment rate. The fact that it's higher here is not worrisome. It's job creation that is the one number because everybody's got to report, sign up for Social Security and things like that. And that is a real indication. If we were creating lots of jobs and the unemployment rate went up, most economists would say that's healthy because people want to go to work and they're now out looking for jobs. So the key is job creation. And in all fairness, it's probably easier in New York City or in any city around this country to do it on a city basis. The president and Congress's job for nationwide is much tougher. But each city's got its own problems. If you bring down crime and improve the schools and public health, we got back to before, all of those things contribute to the feeling in the city, the expectations and the confidence. And when people think things are going well, then they invest and they expand and they buy and they take another job and all of those things.
Your school's chancellor, who I spoke with yesterday, Dennis Walcott, pushing pretty hard over the last couple of weeks that this is not a new thing that you've been looking for, but the right to get the bad teachers, teachers with sexual misconduct and the like, out of the classroom.
Well,
and yet everybody seems to be pushing against you really hard. I can't even imagine you even discuss it.
The union's job is to protect their members. The hypocrisy, however, of saying that we really are here to protect the kids when they're not, that's not their job. They say, we have plenty of ways to get rid of teachers who are sleeping with their students. You don't have plenty of ways. They always grieve everything, which is a process that slows it down. They sue. They do all of these things. It's a strange world where people are opposed to getting out teachers who are abusing our kids. How can you?
It's insane.
Well, Dennis is trying, and we are trying. And, you know,
there's no co-sponsor of the bill in the assembly.
That's correct. But somebody said to me, you know, oh, look, it's terrible with all these teachers. And I said, we have 75,000 teachers. There's no city with 75,000 people that doesn't have a crime a day. So let's put it in perspective, okay? The teachers in New York City are probably the best, most honest, most hardworking, best trained group of teachers anybody's ever put together of any size. So let's look on the positive side. Are there some bad apples? Yes. Ed Koch, I think, one time talked about there was a cop arrested for something. He said, you know, there was 35,000 uniformed cops, whatever the number was. There's always going to be a bad apple.
What I don't understand is why the teachers, those that you just described, the top 95%, will acquiesce to the protection of the five.
Because they don't have any say. The truth of the matter is, in a union like the teachers' union, it's a small group of the teachers who are the real activists. They tend to be the teachers with a lot more tenure, closer, a lot more time on the job, closer to retirement. They really are the political force within the union. With any organization, there's a small group of people that run it. There's nothing different of a union from Congress or, you know, your church or whatever the case may be. And they're the ones that are violently opposed to any change. If you talk to the younger, newer teachers, they don't have anything in common with these people who are breaking the law, and it's an embarrassment to them. But they don't really have any say. They just want to go and teach kids. And as I said before, we're having an overwhelmingly number of, it's like 10 times the slots we have available for these schools we're going to close, of teachers who want to come and teach there from around the country.
Yeah, you can't answer it. You vetoed the living wage, as you promised you would be doing.
Yep. Living wage and prevailing wage bills are not good for our competitiveness, and I don't think the government should be involved there. I think if you have a minimum wage, that I'm not opposed to, and I even said I would be in favor of a modest increase in the minimum wage, but that's for the whole state. It doesn't pick one industry. Living wage and prevailing wage bills are basically tailored for one union, one industry, one region at the expense of everybody else, because those are politically powerful organizations or groups or locations. And whereas the minimum wage, if it were raised, I don't think it would hurt our competitiveness, and I assume that Connecticut and New Jersey would right away be under a lot of pressure. They would probably raise theirs as well, so it wouldn't hurt us. Whereas the living wage and prevailing wage, it depends. One of those bills, if the city rents space in the building, then the landlord has to pay all of his employees or her employees a lot more. So when they rent the space to the city, they're just going to raise our rent. And the public's going to pay for this. Now, nobody connects that, but, you know, this is an outrage. Or they're not going to come here. One of these bills was passed after Fresh Direct picked the Bronx and committed to build there. Why afterwards? Because Fresh Direct said, if this applies to us, we aren't coming. We're going to go to New Jersey. So, okay, we'll exempt you. But the lesson is that companies will not come here if you do this. And, you know, that's down the road, and nobody cares. The next election is the only thing anybody cares about.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got a couple of folks on the phone here. We'll get to them in just a second here. Let me take care of some business. Mr. Mayor, real fast before we get to the telephones, the comptroller says the 9/11 folks have overcharged the city.
Yeah, this is a new level of intellectual dishonesty that we haven't even seen before. This is a contract that was registered with the comptroller's office and finished under the budget approved by his office, and we disallowed a lot of things, and now he's out there screaming that maybe he didn't even read it, but it's really hard to understand how he could say what he said. That what you missed here is that we have now a brand new state-of-the-art 911 system, police, fire, EMS, all in the same place, same technology, completely overhauled, decades-old technology, which was on its last legs. The integration and overhaul is something that mayors have been trying to do for decades. Today, we respond to emergencies better than ever before. The new system is successfully handled more than 5 million calls and allows emergency response to continue. And this guy's going on about this. It's pretty hard to answer something as stupid as his charge.
Okay, let's go to the telephones. Let's start with Stephen out on Long Island. Stephen, your question for the mayor. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I'd like to make a few points very quickly. Number one, Mayor, you are 100% on point here. And the reason is, quality of life for the future of our children. This is something that apparently people are not getting. Statistical fact, nothing good comes out of obesity or diabetes. But there are a laundry list of things terribly that go hand in hand with those conditions. And I think when you mention diabetes, obesity, these are words that kind of fly over people's heads and they don't quite grasp the importance of what you're talking about.
Do you have a question?
Well, I do have one question. You said that it's mostly the government's responsibility to address that. I would argue with you that it's equally as important for parents, not unlike the educational process, to take this responsibility very seriously.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, people that say this, you know, government's interfering. Government here is trying to give people information. We give information by signs and education in schools. We give people information by posting grades on restaurants and calories on menus. And in this case, you give people information by having them have to get two cups instead of one for a 32-ounce drink. When I saw a 32-ounce cup, because you see a 32-ounce bottle, but it didn't dawn on me. When I saw the cup, John, this is the size of the popcorn cup.
I've seen people carrying them across the street that you need two hands to hold it.
You wonder how they can do that, and it just, there's nothing wrong with a lot of the stuff in moderation. But
like,
you know,
like the rest of life. Steven, thanks for the phone call. Tom, you're up next. You've got the mayor. Go.
Yeah, how you doing? Listen, good. I can solve the problem. All you need is a poster with that photograph you created with the sugar cubes right next to the photo, the orders of the drinks at the restaurant. Put a nice photograph up there, a poster, and visually, everyone will solve this problem.
You're probably right. I don't know. It's probably a First Amendment issue of making them put up posters, although some things you do have to put up.
Wait a minute. You have to put the calorie count up on the Big Mac.
I suppose we could do that. I mean, that is a good idea. When I saw it, we did stage a photo for the press. And we had sugar packets in one case and sugar cubes in another. In a 16-ounce drink, there is so much sugar. John, if you had a cup of coffee or a cup of hot tea, you could not dissolve that amount of sugar in it.
Exactly. There's just not enough liquid.
You could not drink it. I mean, forget about it. There's just not enough liquid to do it. Now, maybe eventually if you stir it up, you finally get it there.
Let me go to James here. James, what's on your mind, James? James. No, James decided he didn't want to go. He decided to do. There must be limits in your mind as to how far government should go.
Okay, I'll give you a good example. I do not believe we should ban smoking.
Oh, ban smoking.
Yes. If you want to smoke, I think you're pretty stupid because the evidence says it's going to kill you, but I think you have a right to do that. Now, you know, what's the difference between that and somebody's trying to commit suicide where we obviously force them to take psychiatric help? We stop somebody from committing suicide. We don't let you do that. But I happen to believe you have a right to smoke if you want. But you don't have a right to have other people have to breathe your smoke. And New York City's anti-smoking law is based around the workplace. So in a restaurant where there are employees, we say you don't have to make a choice between your health and your job. We're banning smoking because if smoking goes on in that, you will be hurt. But if you go to an American Legion post where the bartender is a volunteer, the law doesn't apply.
Are you thinking the same way with obesity? Because it does indeed impact other people.
Well, it does.
In a different way, but it impacts people.
One of the biggest costs is a $4 billion expense in New York City every year to deal with obesity, and that's growing. The number of people that have died, that die from smoking in New York City is going down. It's down to about 7,000, way down from where it was before. The number of people who are dying from obesity is up to 5,000 and heading north very rapidly.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it. You can have a soda today?
I'll have a small one. It's taste, enough.
Absolutely. Have yourself a fine weekend, all right? We'll catch up with you next week. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, we've got lots more.